Record that the time is 8:05 by this clock, January 21, 2011, and would the secretary please call roll?
Representative Wilson.
Here.
Representative Seaton.
Here.
Representative Feige. Representative Pruitt.
Here.
Representative Sisna. Representative Kawasaki. Chair Dick.
Here. Thank you. I did speak with the members that are absent ahead of time, and they all have the homework assignment of listening to the record of this this meeting, and they'll give their presentation, in a following meeting. I would like to announce at this time too. I pondered with some of the experienced members of the committee from the past, and I asked Representative Pruitt to be vice chair of this committee. I thought it would be a very fitting, and he's got a lot of young energy, and he's got a lot on his plate, but he's got the energy to match it. So I asked him to be vice chair. I'd like to welcome everybody here to the first meeting of the Education Committee. I'd like to announce that this is the second meeting I've been in, and I'm chairing that meeting, so if it's a little awkward, that's because we're learning. I'd also like to ask everybody to
I just call a brief at ease while we get back.
Brief at ease. The advantage I have here is the former chair sitting right next to me. I would like to recognize at this time, by way of introduction, that Sheila Peterson is the education aide, Kelly Burnett is the recording secretary, and Karen Stewart is the moderator. And anybody else, please forgive me because I'm still groping with names, but I definitely recognize Carl Rose, the president of the Alaska Association of School Boards. So welcome. I put a lot of thought into getting here, and for us it's just four members right now. And but I thought even as we're sitting here beginning this meeting, there's 129,000 students K to 12 that are getting ready for school. There's about 7,000 teachers in this state getting ready to have another day in the classroom, and there's not much we can do for them today. But I really do believe that if we can do good things in this committee this year, and we can really reshape and help to form the energy and the focus of education in the state down the road. I'm not at all saying that what we've done in the past is wrong, but we're certainly going to take a look at lots of alternatives this year. We're going to be creative. We're going to think out of the box, and we're going to respect that which people have done in the past. But I really hope that we can come up with some real creative solutions. We're going to put some energy and some excitement into education. The purpose of this meeting, and I, for those that are listening and watching, before the meeting, I handed six questions to all the committee members and ask them so we can know where everybody's coming from, so that when Representative Seat makes a statement, I understand where he's coming from, what his experience is, and I can better understand him. Like Representative Feige, who isn't here, was a graduate of West Point. Well, that's a, I mean, he has a viewpoint in education that I don't have and never will have. So we're not afraid of diversity here. We're not afraid of differences. I welcome that. But at the same time, we need to know, each one of us, why we're saying what we're saying, and I think it would really help smooth things out in the future once I understand what Representative Wilson has to say, that, well, I know why she's saying that, and, oh, I understand that, and it really helped me understand where you're coming from, and just, again, help things flow and help us to be creative. So I think when it comes to having our differences, we've all heard the the rather trite analogy of the five blind men, feeling the elephant. But I really do believe if every one of us stood up and said, this is what Alaska is like, talking about our district, you know, that the elephant would look pretty homogenous, you know. I mean, we are so different, you know, each one of us representing such a diverse area and diverse population. So we really do need to listen to all aspects of the state and all people who have a sense of ownership and have bought into education, and particularly the customer, the student. You know, we really need to be focused on them and what type of communities they're living in, and where they're where they're hoping to go and what they're hoping to get out of education. So maybe I'll ask some of the more experienced and Representative Seaton was the chair of the Education Committee last year, and I'm really thankful he was here. I told people I traded Boardwalk and Park Place to get the chairmanship here. But when Representative Seaton signed on to be on the committee, I relaxed quite a bit. I thought, I have him right there so I can ask him questions. So, since you're perhaps the more experienced and bolder, I was wondering if you would address those the questions that we asked of you, okay?
Sure. And, you know, the first question was asking for a brief biography and history of my education. And I grew up, born and raised on the coast of Southern California, went to Wayneen High School way back in 63, graduated there. I went to Ventura College, which is a junior college system, I got an Associate of Arts degree from there and went to the University of California, Santa Barbara, and then transferred there from there to the University of Alaska, where I got a Bachelor's of Science in Biology and then a Master's of Arts in Teaching the Biological Sciences. Then I continued to teach there for a year at Wainwright, the fort. I then went down to California and taught 2 years of high school in California before taking and then took a break and went down to San Diego State College and got a Master's of Science in Marine Zoology, and then came back, taught another year of school, then went to the University of California, Santa Barbara again in a PhD program. And at the same time, I had been up here and fishing, and then I decided fishing was more fun than working in the science field directly, and so I became a commercial fisherman up here. And so the extension of my education from there was I completed a Emory diesel mechanics program at the AVTEC, which is also under our purview here. It used to be called the Alaska Skill Center in Seward. And so that's kind of the hands-on, and that's the background there. The other questions, you know, why did I choose to be on House Education Committee? I think that for the future of Alaska, this is probably the most important committee in the legislature. Short term, you know, we do finance, we do different things, but for our long-term education, and the direction that our children and grandchildren take is where our future lies. And then there was a question on personal philosophy and a statement. And I guess that what I feel is that what we need to do is engage students with a learning style that's appropriate for them and set high goals and give them a pathway to achieve those goals with hard work. So that's kind of where my overarching desire is to go, is to provide that pathway that they decide, but provide those tools or those mechanisms, those styles of learning that are appropriate to that student so that they will have success. And then, you know, what skills or experiences you bring to the House Education Committee? I don't know, as chair of the committee last year, you know, we were heavily involved in a lot of issues, and so I guess that's the background. I think that the committee did some pretty good work and put out a number of bills addressing issues. Those didn't make it all the way through, but we you know, I have the background on where those came from. There may be other ideas or ways to modify those, which is fine. But that's the background. And what good things do you see happening for education today? I guess the biggest one that I see is the scholarship that we've set forward
to basically transform K-12 education in the state by setting goals that people are going to reach for and that schools are going to have to adjust to make sure that everybody can get the quality education. Because if those classes that are needed for that education and the direction with work keys and not just providing for college but also providing for those students that want to go into ready-made careers and the labor force, they're educated and willing to do that. And I think the scholarship gives us the opportunity to set those high goals and draw the parents and the schools themselves into the correction and provision of those high-quality standards. So let's see, problems for education. Well, we've got a number. We can only deal, you know, with so many here because we're not the State Board of Education. It'd be really good to deal with them on the standards and those things. But I see a lot of the problem that I see is that students are not engaged because we don't focus with No Child Left Behind and other test devices. We don't focus on the learning styles that that are applicable to each student. And so I think that student engagement in the classroom, mentorship, those things are not prevalent because we've been focusing on other things. And so I guess the other questions were, what more do I want to learn about? I'll be happy to see the issues that you, with firsthand knowledge, bring from Bush, Alaska, and those schools. And I hope we are able to be successful in addressing the issues that come before us this year.
Thank you.
I was told 15 minutes. I hope that's close enough for you.
That's close enough. Thank you, Representative Seaton. Representative Wilson, would you be willing to go next since you have more experience and while we build our confidence here?
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Well, my background was that I was raised on a farm, and I walked a mile to school every day, and I went to a one-room country school all my elementary years. Then we moved, and I went to a regular high school in a town, and then I did go to a community college. At the community college, I got my education. I got my associate degree as a nurse and my associate degree in science. And the funny thing is, this was way back then, and it's just amazing now because people get double degrees all the time now. But at that community college, they had to go through the board and check to see if they could give me a double degree because it had never been done before. So, I mean, you know, it's amazing how education has advanced over the years. I went ahead then and went to Chapel Hill in North Carolina and got my degree and my certification as a national school nurse. And then that meant that I could be a school nurse in any state. And then when we moved to Alaska, I went to UAF, and this was through distance. Actually, they came and gave presentations, and I learned, I took classes to become an EMT 1, 2, and 3, and then I eventually taught EMT 1 and 2. So, and that's when I lived in Tok. And so I feel that I've lived in various places and experienced different things that's not the same by any means as Bush, Alaska, but because I have experienced, you know, one-room schools and that sort of thing, that I think that helps me here. Why the Education Committee? Well, first of all, because I've taught in a school setting as a school nurse. I was a school nurse 9.5 years, and during that time, it was in a district of 4,000 students, and so there were lots of in the first grade there was probably 8 first grades, you know, and you know that type of thing, and I taught let's see, it was drug and alcohol prevention in the first to through third grades, becoming adolescents in the fifth grade, AIDS classes in the seventh grade, and STDs in the 10th grade. So I've been in the classroom quite a bit with that. And so I kind of feel like I, and at this point in time also, my husband is a superintendent of schools, so I've, you know, I hear it in one ear, and I've experienced it myself going in and out of classrooms, so in and out of schools. And my professional philosophy, every child counts. And, you know, no matter who they are, they count, they make a difference. And especially the quiet ones and the troublemakers that, you know, people kind of, I think those children probably need more help than the ones that fit in between. You know, they kind of have a curve, but I think those kids many times, and some of them are just polite, so it doesn't, I'm not painting a brush stroke for all of them, but I feel that as a teacher, you need to try to really let those kids know that you really care, all the kids, but not ignore the quiet one, because they're easy to take care of because they don't make any waves, you know, and then don't just send the troublemakers to the principal. I think that if they find out that a teacher really cares about them, it opens up, they're desperately many times wanting somebody to care. So that's a real big philosophy for me, that every child counts. And I think teacher education is extremely important. I think that our universities are a little bit behind the eight ball when it comes to we're learning so much now. We're learning about when the brain takes on responsibilities and you know, what all those type of things, and what makes kids tick if there's domestic violence in the home or child abuse or all those type of things. And I think that teachers need to be taught that, and ways to deal with different kids more in at the university level, so that when they come out and to be teachers, they're a little more prepared. So I feel that that's something that really needs to be worked on. I feel it's embarrassing to me that we have kids nowadays that don't even have IEPs, but they still can't read when they graduate, or they can't, you know, they can't fill out the forms for employment and whatnot. So I think that shame on us, you know, for graduating kids that are within the normal realm and still can't do those things. That's ridiculous. What my skills are, 15 years on the Education Committee, because when I was in North Carolina, I was on the Education Committee also. 9.5 years teaching in the classroom, and I think I have a lot of common sense, and I think maybe being raised in a farm helps that type of situation, because you're out there working and doing things all the time. What are some of the good things that we have in education today? I think funding has increased ever since I've been in the last 10 years. We have increased funding quite a bit in the schools. We realize that one size doesn't fit all, and we're trying and have been addressing that. I think the career assessments that we're starting to give kids are really good, because that gives them a goal, and they kind of know then what they have to do. And I think that the increased funding along the way that we've started to look at for in the exceptional children area, and we're just starting to zero in more on vo-tech-type schools and whatnot. And we're realizing finally that not all kids are college-bound, and that maybe that we need to help them in another way. But we need to be able to, for those type of kids, we need to be able to prepare them so that when they get out of school, they can either at least get a job or go apply for an application to get a job. And I'm really excited about the scholarship program, because I think that will make kids strive to be better, and that's much better than what's been done in the past. Problems, I think our dropout rate is something that we really have to get a handle on. I think it's important to not teach to the test. There's so many tests going on in schools that we're teaching to the test and not the basics, and I think that's important. And sometimes we've dummied down instead of a smart, you know, try to make the kids strive, and so that's, again, why the scholarship program for college is really good. And I think we need to do more teacher education, more in service. I think we need to make sure that there's changes at the university level so that our teachers are getting better prepared, when, especially Alaska teachers, because they experience, I think, some different things than maybe the lower 48 do. What do I want to learn? I want to learn as much as I can about it all. And goals are to find the answers to the things that we need to do for kids. Find out what scientifically has been proven to work, and maybe look at some things that haven't been tried and see what we can do about them. And not to be afraid to add or subtract to what we're already doing. Mm-hmm. And I think the exit exam is ridiculous. Why would we be testing kids at the 12th grade level if they know 8th grade level stuff? That's just, you know. And I voted for it. I was here when it came into existence, and I voted for it, and I think that was a mistake. And I think that with the testing, with No Child Left Behind, this testing that we have now, we don't need the exit exam. So there you have it.
Thank you. Brief at ease. I hope people will forgive me. I'm still learning faces and names, and I've asked Representative Wilson to introduce somebody that's pretty significant to all of us.
Okay. In the audience, I also have noticed that Bruce Johnson is in the audience, and he is new, a new face for the job that he has anyway, and he's with the, and I don't know the correct terminology, but it's the Alaska School Administrators Association.
Welcome. During the 80s, the two freshmen here debated amongst ourselves, and Representative Brewer agreed to go to present next.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lance Pruitt. For those of you that don't know a little bit about me, I am a lifelong Alaskan. I was born and raised essentially in the district that I now represent. So while it's a small district, you can kind of get an idea that I've been in the same side of area of Anchorage, the East Anchorage, for all my life. So I really enjoy it over there. I had the opportunity to graduate from a small school that actually doesn't exist any longer, a little school called Heritage. And from there, moved on, stayed in Alaska, and went to the University of Alaska Anchorage, UAA, right there, where I got my BA in history. And it's interesting that at the time I was looking for something that I would enjoy, and sure enough, it pays off as I become a legislator. It's amazing how understanding history is a dynamic portion of what we do. I also followed that up with getting my master's in business administration from Kaplan University. And that was actually an exciting time. Got to have classes with people that were, in some cases, on the other side of the world. A few students that I joined with and had projects with that were, I remember, in Sweden as well as other places, which you know, kind of talks about the technology aspect, which is one of the things I'll address later that I'm excited about and want to see more of. So why did I choose the Education Committee? Well, because I personally believe that, you know, kids are our future. One of my fellow representatives, my new colleagues, pointed out that I'm now the baby of the legislature. I think she was at one point, so that's why she was pointing that out to me. So, you know, I understand that we have to look a ways out. We can't just look at tomorrow. We can't look in the next couple years. That we have to embrace our kids and understand that they're tomorrow, they're our future. So that's one of the reasons that I felt really, really passionate about making sure that I was on here, because building a well-rounded education for those kids is paramount to our future. Mm-hmm. It's paramount to the state's future. And there's also, with that being said, in my district, I live in, obviously, in Anchorage, so we have the largest school district in the state that's right there. And so there's obviously, you know, kids there. I have two of my own that are young, a four-year-old and a year and a half. So I also have kids and neighbors that will be part of the system. So there's also a direct impact, and I want to make sure that they've got, that we've prepared them. My personal education philosophy is that I believe there's not one direct avenue for a well-rounded education for every child. And I think that's important because with the in Anchorage specifically, we have a 70% dropout rate. And I think it's interesting to note that there, not all of the kids, and I have several principals that actually live within my district, actually related to one. And when you sit down and you talk to them, you can see that there are some kids that they have one mindset. They maybe they work better with their hands than they work with writing on paper and doing some of the things that I am a little better at. And the question is, are we engaging them? And I think that we have opportunities there to engage those kids as well as to engage the parents. Make sure that we've got parents involved, and parents are have a say. That it's not just an opportunity for someone to watch their kids while they're at work. And I think most of them do believe that they are involved and that they can be a part of it. But, you know, continuing to encourage that, continuing to encourage parents to get more involved, I think is that's a positive thing for us. Skills and experiences, I personally, ever since I entered the workforce, I've managed people. And when you manage people, you see the product of our education system. And I have hired a wide variety of people with skill sets from GED all the way up to master's degrees, and you can tell with the various individuals that come out, you can see how well certain aspects of their education was, not because of how far they went, but in some cases just because of how maybe they were engaged while they were there. And so I've had the opportunity, like I said, to see the end result. And I've also been able to, there in Anchorage, serve on our School Budget Advisory Commission. Actually, I ended my term there as one of the co-chairs. And for those of you that might not know, I mean, we have had a $787 million budget last year, and it looks like this year it's, well, when you add everything, all the money's in, it's somewhere around $811 million. So there's a lot of money, almost 45,000 kids as well. So that gave me an opportunity to really kind of see and get immersed in what's going on here. And when you're dealing with that much money, that many kids, there's a lot going on. I believe it was about a 3-inch stack was their budget, and there was no way that anyone on the commission on the school board was reading every part of that. But I really treasure that opportunity to start to understand what's going on in at least in my school district. What good things are happening? I think virtual learning is a huge plus, especially for Alaska. Because we are such a broad state, you know, 700,000 people, and I think I heard someone say yesterday, 700,000 people is basically a suburb in most big cities. There's a lot of people, or a small amount of people, that are spread out in a vast area. How do we make sure that we are able to touch those kids that might not have access to some of the same teachers that maybe we have in the Anchorage School District or some of the other larger school districts might have. And I've been able to talk to some of the people in the Anchorage School District and how they're trying to use virtual learning just within the school district itself, and they're really excited about the opportunity of having one teacher who maybe do a very good job or maybe has expertise in one area, and how they're able to touch multiple kids through various schools through virtual learning. So I'm really excited to see that. What problems do I see? Well, I addressed earlier in the Anchorage School District the 70% dropout rate. That's that's a big issue. We want to make sure that we've engaged as many students as we can, and that kind of brings about one of the experiences I had when I first started at UAA. I remember one of my professors mentioning 8:30 in the morning class, which is pretty early for college. He mentioned that he would have a percentage of students, and with that being said, there's a caveat on this, a percentage of students who could not read in a college-level class. Now, for those of you know, UAA is an open, there is no entrance exam to it, so there's a lot of reasons that could take place. It doesn't necessarily mean it was one of the school districts within the state, but it was disturbing to hear that we've got adults that are trying to enter into college, and they have not had the proper tools to even be able to read a 100-level class there. So I see that as a, you know, making sure that we've got those kids that come out of it, as well as making sure that we've engaged them so that we understand, like I mentioned earlier, that kids can be in multiple levels. They can be accountants, but they're also weld pipe together. And we want to make sure that we're engaging all spectrums, preparing our workforce for the future. And this, you asked for solutions, and you know there's no silver bullet. And that's, I think, kind of a little bit of why we're here, is to make sure that we're giving the tools to those teachers and the tools to the parents so that we can, help these things. What issues do I want to learn about? Well, I want to learn, and I'm glad you said learn, because Education Committee, I'd hope we'd learn. Coming from the outside, I want to learn a little bit more specifically about the funding calculation. How does that work? It's not just a very simple way that we come up with that. So I'm looking forward to learning a little bit more about that, and a little bit more, and Peggy addressed it on the testing, because the testing, I think there is a lot of different thoughts out there, and it's actually a little confusing, because there's not just one test. There's so many different tests. There's what we got with No Child Left Behind. There's the exit exam. And, you know, and those of us adults trying to learn, if we're confused, I wonder what's going on with these kids. How are they confused and going through? So, you know, making sure that learn a little bit more about the testing, as well as making sure that the testing is effective for the students, that we're not, and actually Peggy hit it right on the head, if we are doing testing, we don't want to just make that we're teaching to that test. We want them to pass the test, but we also don't want them to just know that, and SAT is a good example, that there's sometimes patterns to it, and you want to circle the right one, as well as workforce development. That's another aspect that I'm really excited to learn about. And then what do I hope will be accomplished? Well, I hope to talk a little bit about in technology that I mentioned earlier, and the embracing of technology. I trust that we'll be able to continue to give teachers the tools to be successful. And in some cases that means funding, in some cases that means finding out if we or if the state is hindering their ability to be able to reach those kids. So those are a couple of the different ways that I'm looking also to see something accomplished. And like I said, I'm really excited about it, and look forward to our session doing something good for the kids.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Yeah, and appreciate, you know, your varied background. When you said 70% dropout rate, did you mean 70% completion and 30% dropout rate?
You're correct, Representative Seaton. That was the 70% is the completion, so we have a 30%, give or take, you know, a couple percentages based on the year dropout rate. Thank you for clarifying that.
Okay. Sure, I just didn't want your
No.
school district calling up.
I get something, and I probably would have. So, no, thank you for clarifying that.
Well, I have a timer here. I'll start my timer so I won't run over. My bio, I was raised on the East Coast. My dad called it Taxachusetts. Spent 13 years in the same school, very secure. Some people celebrate their birthdays. Mine doesn't matter much. But June 10th, every year, I have a little quiet personal celebration because I graduated June 10th in 1963. And that's the one I really celebrate because school wasn't really a pleasant experience for me. And when I became a teacher, I always wanted to be the kind of teacher I wished I had and seldom did. So I started college at the University of Maine. I tell people as a freshman legislator, this is the first time I've been a freshman since 1963. second year, I went to the University of Massachusetts. I was 2292964. I was a small town boy in a big university and didn't work. Hitchhiked to Alaska I made a living in mining, subsistence fishing, trapping. I'd skin the marten, fur buyer skin me, I work construction a lot. I was firefighting, helitech crews, and I think I faced a lot of the same problems a lot of rural people face, that most people pick a profession and go to where it applies. I picked a place that I love and try to make a living there, and it was really hard. And in years, firefighting was great. In other years, when it was rainy, there was no income. So I struggle with a lot of the similar issues that other people out there struggle with. Well, there was a cook at the mine, and her name was Phyllis Michaels, and she said, Alan, someday you're going to find out you should be a teacher. And I pondered that, but I put it off. And then I had five kids, and so I went to one of the old timers in the country, and I said, George, if you're my age and you wanted to live in this country, but you're having a hard time struggling, what would you do? Instantly, because he'd been thinking about it for years, he said, I'd be a teacher. Well, those two people who I looked up to triggered me, and I loaded my boat, headed downstream. I had so much load I couldn't head back up again. Went to Antioch, there's an extension of the university, and so after a couple of years, I get my degree in cross-cultural education out of UAF. It was an extension of UAF, and that was in 1979. So I've lived in the bush for 44 years, been married 42 years to my Athabascan wife on January 24th. So it's coming up. Help me remember. but most of my time in Alaska has been out in the bush, and that's where my heart is. To quote Br'er Rabbit, that's my briar patch. So. I really want to be on the education committee because I have a real sense of destiny. I really believe we can do some good this year. I tell people I'm trying to leave a mark while I still got a pencil. I'm 65, and I'm not doing this for a career. My educational philosophy is, first thing I'd say is that we are the temporary stewards of other people's greatest treasure, and we need to keep that in mind. And so as we handle that great treasure, I think our task as educators is to prepare young people for a future even the most imaginative of us can barely envision. I mean, who knows what's going to come? So, and that's the challenge here, but it also evokes the creativity in all of us, too, that we can maybe get out of the box and just start thinking in some different directions. I know there's no silver bullet, but I believe there's a one word that for me encapsulates a good part of what I perceive to be the solution. And that word is relevance. I believe if we can make education as relevant as we can, first off, it'll be motivational for the students. If we can make it relevant to their daily life, when they walk out of the school, they can see the application of the use of what we're teaching. And if they can look to their future and see, well, I might not use it today, but it's out there for me. And I believe that's where we'll get the most buy-in. We talk about the engagement. And I really believe the word relevance encapsulates most of where my focus is. But also, once we make things relevant, that when the students see the connection to their own lives. Let me quick story. There was a teacher that came to Lyme Village, and he was from Oregon. He said, what kind of fish you got here? And so I started to tell him, and I was bragging, you know, we got had this kind of salmon, that kind of salmon. He stopped me right in the middle, and he said, yeah, at home, he said, you know, we got bluegills, and we got crappies, and we got largemouth bass. He's going on. What did he ask? I was wondering, what was going on? Why did he ask me that question if he didn't want my whole answer? Well, and I pondered that for quite a while, and I let it talk with him. And this is what he said, was that what he was doing was he was trying to, with this new information, he was trying to find what part of his thought process he was going to connect that to. And while bluegills and crappies are a little bit different from our king salmon, that's how he connected it to his reality. But the sad part was is he went through the rest of the year not doing a good job himself of connecting what the information he was giving to the students to their reality. You see, that connection wasn't as good as it could have been. So I believe relevance is important for motivation, and it also enhances learning. Once you can connect it to something you know, we all trying to learn names. We think, I met a guy with, his name was Les. And I thought, well, he's almost got less hair than me. So that's how I remember Les, is he almost has more less. So we make those connections with something we know. And I really believe we need to make those links and those connections in order to enhance learning. What skills and experiences? I really believe in times of change, we've got to really think about versatility. You know, the koala bear is going to take away the eucalyptus tree. The koala bear is going to starve if there's only one thing it can live by. And I believe in times of change now that we've got to teach young people to be versatile. We used to think of a career, but nowadays it might be 2, 3, or 4 careers before somebody gets to the end of their, you know, their working years. The skills and abilities that I bring, I did a lot of my student teaching and practicums in the village of Antioch. I taught in Lyme Village, where it was my wife's home village. And that isn't as much fun as most people would imagine. You know, re-entering the local dynamic is all of a sudden having an income. And it brought stresses that a lot of people at the university didn't anticipate. I taught in the village of Tulida. I tell people I was the best teacher in Tulida. Simultaneously the worst. I was the only. But that was a good experience because there was nothing else to do until I had a butt teach. So, but I did work for the Iditarod School District, which was as big as the state of Ohio with only 365 students in the whole district. When I left Tulida, I was a voc ed coordinator for 3 years. And I was able to connect there. And I was also the curriculum developer for Iditarod School District. I did the health, science, and math curriculum for the school district. But the whole time I worked in the district office, I always wanted to stay connected to the classroom. So I taught high school math in McGrath schools, always trying to stay connected to the kids. I was the correspondence principal for the Iditarod School District for three years. And out there, there's a lot of trapping families and mining camps, and I was hanging out of Super Cubs, dropping books into the willow patch until we had enough snow to land. And it was a different dynamic. I'm very much in favor of homeschooling, but I found that homeschooling will either make you or break you as a parent and a teacher. I think for the parents and families that do well, college is a step down. They've already got the discipline. They can sit at the table and work even while they're not, you know, they're not surrounded by bells and the other stimulus. But at the same time, there's people that don't do well at all. And the ones that don't do well really don't do well. And I think there needs to be accountability in the homeschool programs. So then for 8 years, I traveled the state. I worked for the Alaska Rural Systemic Initiative with Ray Barnhart as one of the directors. And I hope to get him here to give testimony someday. He's just kind of the father of lots of things in this state when it comes to education. I did that for 8 years, and I helped to write the standards for culturally responsive schools and all those that we've seen. For 8 years, I did science and culture camps. I traveled the whole state from Sitka to Barrow, from Onalaska to even Whitehorse, Canada, training teachers. And in the culture camps, I would have to watch the students interact with the elders. And from that interaction, my assignment was to glean a science project and work with the students so they could take that science project into the classroom that the rest of the year. I ran the ACES, the American Indian Science and Engineering Society, science fair, statewide, did regional and state fairs, and even sent students to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where the students from Circle got first place in physics in the national. I just had a break. So, and it was very relevant. You know, they did, they compared synthetic fur with with the real thing. You know, they did, but it was exhaustive testing. So it was good science, and it was a wonderful experience. While working for the World Systemic Initiative, I wrote Village Science, Village Math, Northern Science, science camps, fairs, and projects, and all. I hope to make all this available to people, PDF, free download. It's all public domain. That was a wonderful experience. I didn't have many summers to myself, but that was the most broadening experience I had because it allowed me to get into classrooms, not every village, but all over the state. I get a very good sampling and smattering. I did had a contract with Cook Inlet Tribal Council for 1 year to develop a curriculum to motivate Native students in Anchorage because Anchorage is the largest Native village in Alaska, is it not? Yes, the largest Native population is definitely in Anchorage. To motivate young Native students to get involved in the ANSET program, Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. Yeah, alphabet soup again. So I did 4 videos trying to doing that. You know, you need a vision and why you need math and what the applications of algebra and calculus, and I did one on matrices and simultaneous equations, and the viewing of that one hasn't been too broad yet. But anyway, and I did a hard copy of curriculum too. Again, always trying to show the relevance. If you'll bear with me a minute, I've watched the Native people for years, and I really believe the real important thing is to show the usefulness of something. When my father-in-law loaded his dog sled to go beaver trapping, he put his tent, his stove, his grub box, you know, he put his sleeping bag, his gun, his shells, his beaver snares, his ice pick. He put those things in. He didn't have bobbleheads and a picture of grandma in a toaster. You know, he didn't bring anything extra. It was always what is useful. And I really believe if we can show the Native people and all people, but particularly Native people, the usefulness of what we're teaching, I really believe that's where they're going to buy in. I just believe that. So, and that was my assignment with Cook Inlet Tribal Council, and I hope to make those videos public domain soon. They have copyright on that, but I hope to make that public domain. I did work for 2 years with the COSI, which is the making science curriculum, environmental science curriculum, in relation to oceans. So I worked for them for 2 years. I did one video on locally, culturally relevant science projects. And I always tell, when I have work with kids with science projects, I always tell them, and there's one kind of project I forbid. And they all go just wither back, and I say, and that's a boring project. I said, give me some smoke, give me some noise, give me some fire. Even if it smells, you know, bring it along. You know, we've got to get interested here, right? So we were chucking atlatls, and we always had a lot of fun with that. So for COSI, I did do a video on locally culturally relevant science projects, which I'd be glad to show off at any request. One request is enough. I'll get it on. And I also brought students into the State Science Fair, and I had a COSI component of the State Science Fair that's held in Begich Middle School, I guess, or elementary. So, and I did write a book called Dealing with Accelerating Change, and that was also prompting young people to do relevant science projects related primarily to oceans, rivers, and climate change. So, and I have a confession to make. I was on the state committee that wrote the NCLB standards. It would have been worse if I wasn't there, right? So, and I was also on the committee that wrote the state science standards. And I have another confession to make. With all respect, I believe it was a flawed process, and we did come up with a somewhat flawed product. But I believe that can be addressed. I'm not saying that to malign anyone. It's where we were, and I really believe we can add to it. We don't need to take anything away. But I do believe the way that we present the standards to teachers and students as fragments that need to be checked off in little check boxes, there isn't a cohesion, there isn't the application to people's lives. So, okay, what are we doing good in the state? And I think, first off, I think we get some great teachers. I really do, and we need to explore all avenues of finding incentives to keeping good teachers and to bringing good teachers here. You know, we all work for a paycheck, but I know why teachers work. You work for that light in the students' eyes. You know, when you see them light up, you know, you can't quantify that. I mean, that's just intangible. And I'll tell you, the highlight of my educational career is nothing. Even this, I cherish this. But even the highlight of my educational career, I was at a science fair in Old Harbor, out of Kodiak, and two students asked my autograph. And I tell you, that outdoes everything else. It was like, I felt like a baseball hero, you know. I hit my home run, and that remains a highlight. So I'll repeat what Representative Pruitt said, that I really believe that technology is going to be able to, we will be able to teach physics in Nunam Iqua. We really will be able to. So I'm excited about that. We certainly, everybody's talking about increased bandwidth, and so there's a lot of creative energy going on there. Myself, I can see e-books, I can see text on e-books, I can see saving textbook money, get e-books, and I can even see maybe editing some of the stuff that comes out of Texas and California, keep the content, but we can put Alaskan examples, Alaskan pictures, and we can make it relevant to any, even in small communities, we can make that relevant so they can see themselves. Okay, I'm not over my time yet. So, problems, I do see dropout is... Brief at ease. And I'll start my personal timer so I don't run over here. Thank you. Problems I see in education, we talk about dropout as a problem, but I really believe that the dropout situation is really just a symptom, and we need to get to the core of that and find out what it is. I don't think it's rocket science. It's not like some mystery out there. I think we just need to maybe listen to the people that are dropping out, and not just the dropouts, but even achievement. I visited the president of the university up in Fairbanks, and he said the students coming out of the Anchorage School District have the same problem as the students coming out of the Bush, that many of them have to take a year in those 060, 070 classes just to prepare for 4 years of college. So I was in Hawaii, and I was a carpenter, and I was building a pretty fancy, tricky dormer one time, and the boss came up to me, and he said, what were we thinking when we did this? And I looked at, well, he didn't cuss me out, you know. And I said, how did he see that? You know, I mean, how did he see what I did wrong? It was, and then I took 10 steps back, and it was just obvious. I mean, a child could have seen it from 10 steps back, but I had the pitch of the roof wrong. But when I was up close, I didn't see it. I think a lot of times as educators, we're so close and we're so involved and so engaged, and we have so many things we're in, you know, we have this concern and that concern, and sometimes you just take 10 steps back. Even a child could see it. I really do believe that as we go through this year, and hopefully we get educated about education, I really believe that a lot of the solutions are just going to become self-evident. I think they're just going to be apparent. They'll be obvious. But I do know that I believe one of the solutions might be the regional or magnet schools, you know, for where the students can come from the villages, maybe like Galena seems to be an excellent example, Nenana seems to be a wonderful example. But at the same time, we need to be, and maybe with the technology, we can have physics in Nunam Iqua. You know, we'll be able to reach out to those students in the villages that choose not to go to the regional schools. Would they be able to get as good an education as anybody else? But it does concern me. I know that one village I won't name, there was from Labor Day to Halloween, there was three different principals. I mean, talking about student dropout, we had principal dropout there. There's one village I visited where one of the community members, very articulate, said most people can't remember the last graduate. So you talk about graduation rates. Yes. There have been graduates, but most people can't remember the last graduate. And there was another village, one of my staff, her daughter's 22 years old. There were six people in her graduating class, and there's three survivors. At age 22, 50% of the graduating class is gone. So step one of the 12-step program is to get out of denial, start to name the problem, and identify what's really going on. The issues that I'd like to learn about, I'd like to learn about charter schools. You know, everybody throws the word around, and I throw it around too, and I'm thinking, geez, somebody give me a clue. I really do need to know more about charter schools, what they do, and what the original intent of charter schools was. I mean, I have three grandchildren in charter schools, and I confess I'm not really as knowledgeable as I should be. I need to know more about education on a systemic level. I think I have as good an idea as anyone, not better, but as good as, west of the Alaska Range in the bush and small villages. But on a systemic level, I visited the president of the university, but it was only 2 hours. I visited Superintendent Como in Anchorage and attended the Alaska Association of School Boards meeting, talked to superintendents as best I could. I met the new commissioner of education, and by the way, I'm excited. I'm really excited. He's not in love with his own ideas. He's a good listener, and his staff is in mourning. They're almost wearing black. He's such a good leader, so I'm excited about the new commissioner. But I do need to know more about education on a systemic level, budgets. I hope you're still close to me, Bill, because I'm not really a budget man. What I'd like to see accomplished in education with the committee this year, I think we need to take a look at all of our educational philosophies. We need to listen to the Department of Education and Early Development, what their philosophy. And again, if we take those 10 steps back and get the big picture, and then we can maybe reconstruct what needs to happen. And I really do believe if we can, all of us, we can let go of our egos, we can let go of our preconceived notions, let go of our sense of territory. I really do believe that it's not rocket science. We can figure it out. Pretty obvious. It's not about me. It's not about us. It's not about Alaska Association of School Boards. It's not about anybody, any one of us. It's really about those 129,000 students that are out there today, and it's about those 7,000 teachers. This is what it's all about. You know, I'm a bush pilot, and I fly, and I don't fear crashing. I know I can do something, and I bet I can walk away. And I travel in the winter, and I'm not afraid of thin ice. It doesn't bother me. I know how to deal with that. I live in bear country. I'm not afraid of bears. Let me tell you something I do fear. I remember when I taught in Tulalip, and I remember the exhaustion as a teacher. I only had 13 students, but I had 7 different grades. I had 35 preps every day. And I found out you cannot, especially as a second-year teacher, you cannot teach phonics and algebra 2 at the same time. It's not possible. So as I sit here, every cell in my body says, Alan, you're a teacher. And my heart is really with the teachers because they're the ones that are delivering the customer service to those, you know, the other people's greatest treasure. And so I really do believe we need to be as sensitive as possible to the teachers and just get the pulse of what's happening and just how can we serve them so they can serve the students. That's my heart. I do believe, and I'll close with this. I heard a story 30 years ago, and it was when I tell it, it sounds like a joke, but it's really two stories. It's a real science experiment. That scientist took a simple experiment. He had a tank, and he had one pike in the tank, and every day he'd pour the little fish in, and the pike would zip around, and he'd gobble up the little fish, you know. And then one day the pike was over here, and the scientist put a piece of glass in that tank, and he poured the little fish over here. And the pike did his normal thing, and bonk, he hit the glass. And he hit the glass again, and hit it again. And pretty soon he just sat there, stunned. And the scientist pulled the glass out of the tank. And the little fish swam around the pike's head. The pike didn't move because the pike had learned to not trust his natural instincts. I think all young people come to school with an innate curiosity, a motivation. I mean, try to stop them from trying to learn about the world. You know, what's I remember the superintendent in Antioch, he always teased my son and his buddy, you know, he said, hello, girl. Hey, good morning, girls. You know, they get mad at him, so they big puddle out in front of the school, and they turn their bike upside down, and they crank the tire, and they could shoot water up on the superintendent's porch of the district office. You know, so anyway, they're curious. You know, they're creative. They have all this whatever it is in them. You know, the creative juices are flowing, and somehow we put that glass in the tank, and they learn not to trust that instinct of just that curiosity, that personal drive to find out where's the world and how do I fit in it. So I would like to say that even if we make changes, we have to give ourselves time. It took that pike time to learn to start to eat again, to trust his instincts again once he's bumped up against that glass. So I'd like to say that even if we do implement change, I don't think we're going to see instantaneous response because everybody has a stereotypic notion of what school is and what's expected and how they're supposed to play the game. And it's in many schools, I see, village schools, I see the teachers spend maybe 80% of their time in classroom management and motivation. And it ought not to be that way. So as we come up with our creative solutions and we're excited about what we're doing, we need to understand it's going to take a little time for this to implement and time for people to get their balance again and time to get the curiosity flowing. So I thank you for listening to me and brief at ease. We've had thoughts since we started this, so if you'd please elaborate, since I elaborated, please elaborate on what you would give me for.
Sure, and I just wanted to remind everybody that the last legislature established two task force, one on the scholarship and the recommendations and the scholarship funding, and I served on that task force as well as on the task force on higher education and career readiness task force. And so those recommendations mm-hmm. will be coming to us, and hopefully we'll be looking at them. I know we've talked some about technology, and I worry that much of the time we keep saying, oh, we're waiting on bandwidth. And I think that we really need to look at the alternatives to bandwidth while we're waiting, because we know a server that contains terabytes of data now and all these programs that could be the classroom demonstrations, and then you can just have a phone line for the interactivity, can be sent in the mail to any school district in this state, and then even testing. Such as the work keys. They can't take it in Kodiak because they have to do the paper test because they don't have enough bandwidth for 150 kids to take the test at the same time. But there's no reason why we couldn't require the people to send the tests on a hard disk or on a server, and then all the data goes on that, and then it gets sent back. So the proprietary nature of that doesn't go away, but at least the delivery can be in a way in which we are not relying on external technology or satellite, you know, back and forth. We can just mail it. I mean, I think that we really need to get to the point where we don't just take the normal idea of saying, oh, well, we're going to deliver this with bandwidth, because bandwidth is going to be a solution for everybody someday, but it's going to be someday in the future, not today. And so a couple other things, and that was we talked some about completion rates. I mean, they're a problem all over. One of the things that we looked at in the past, in the data that came back, was that Anchorage School District actually did a very, very nice research and just looked at how to identify the kids that were in, oh, not it, probability of not completing, and then they hired graduation coaches, and they increased their graduation rate by 5% with that, which is great to have that. But there were six high schools on the Kenai Peninsula that just decided they were going to do advisor advocate coaches for every student that comes into the school, with the teacher, and three of those were in classroom situations, classes. The others were in mentors. And the increase in graduation is 12% to 15%. You're not having to hire new people. You're having to have teachers take more role, and that is advising kids throughout their stay in the school. But there are mechanisms that we can be, advocating for. That is not only in the high school, but in the colleges. We found the task force had testimony that the University of Alaska Fairbanks, which does have a mandatory advisor program for every degree-seeking student, degree or certificate-seeking student, has a 25% graduation rate in 5 years. Now, that's, we look at that and we think, boy, that's really not very good. But the University of Alaska Anchorage, which has an optional advisor program, has a 16.5% graduation rate in 5 years. And they haven't connected the dots. But all across the United States, those dots have been connected, and the advisor advocate programs are – it's one of those things that you have to incorporate when you're – hiring people into your system. One of your jobs is not only to do research, but it's also you're going to have to mentor, or you're going to have to advise or work with, so many students throughout their career. And so I think that one of the things that we will be seeing from the recommendations from the Task Force on Higher Education is that using the scholarship institutions that are going to accept those are going to have to provide an advocate program. Why would we want to be saying that we're going to put people into a situation and spend state dollars on these kids that have worked hard to get qualified for this, if they've only got a 16 or 25% chance of completion? Because what we're doing with our scholarship is not just trying to get kids into college or into workforce. We're trying to get them through certificates and through the other. So if we can look at that as far as the committee goes when those recommendations come in. I just wanted to mention that those things are going to be really critical, I think, for moving forward. And I'm happy that we've had task force has been meeting all over the state, Nome, Fairbanks, Sitka, for 2 days each. Broad swath of people coming together to give us suggestions and ideas so that we're not going to have to start from scratch. So I just wonder.
Thank you, Representative Stevens. Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess one of the things that I want to bring up is that when I first came in, this is my 11th year now, when I first came in, the funding for schools had been the same for 20 years. I mean, there are no increases. We all kind of know that if our paycheck at home is the same year after year after year, we can't do as much. So when you keep it the same, you're really getting a cut in pay because it doesn't buy as much. It doesn't take care of as much. And so there was a lot of catching up to do for education, I think, especially in some areas. But I also want to say that money is not always the answer. We've got to look at ways that we can do things that maybe make changes that will not cost money. And I think that that's very important. And so we can't just say, we're going to throw money at it and this is going to fix it, because we have also found that the increased money that has come across over all these years, we haven't seen an increase in output. And so I think that's very important for us to look at. We don't want to go any school to go backwards, in what they have to do for kids. And So, and I really think that we have to look at the utilities cost more, a lot more. We know they have are at home. They cost a lot more than they used to cost. And the insurance costs more. And so I think we need to look at those type of things and decide what we're going to do as legislators. But and on the same token, we just need to be find out ways that we can make some improvements, and it doesn't always take money.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Pruitt.
Well, I really don't have too much about, but I will ask if it's possible that Mr. Chair, if Representative Seaton, can you tell me possibly when does the status on those task force, when should we expect those?
The scholarship task force recommendations are already complete. The task force on higher education and career technical readiness we have one final meeting coming up early next month, I believe it is, and then the report is due by, I think, first of April.
Oh, God.
So
okay, so that one will be past opportunity for us to maybe get them in here and learn from their findings.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I don't think so. We have a 2-year legislative session. And so if there are recommendations coming forward that we want to put in bills, we have plenty of time to have committee meetings, and if we want to have committee bills or individual bills based on those recommendations. And in fact, when the task force is meeting, it's going to be meeting here in Juneau, so I think that it would be great if some of the committee members that aren't on the task force might want to sit in on some of those meetings and or send a staff to monitor those, so that they get reports are the synthesis, but sometimes the discussion and the breadth of the materials are very helpful as well. So I as a member of the task force, I would sure invite anybody on this committee to participate in that final meeting coming up next month. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Representative Seaton.
Winding down here, I'd like to think that every meeting that every time we have a meeting, the Education Committee, that we could have maybe just a brief interview, maybe a 10-minute interview from some of the superintendents all over the state, like Superintendent Lattergaard out of McGrath, could 10 minutes of what it's like in McGrath, why is it different, how things are unique in a district that's as big as the state of Ohio with now far less than 300 students in it. Superintendent Diamond down in the Upiat School District, I'd like to hear. I've known Howard for many decades, and I'd like to hear him and see what he has to say. Anyway, so I'd like, if everybody in the committee be in agreement, I'd like to maybe every meeting at least try to line out 10 minutes so we could hear from the superintendents around the state and just get their perspective on everything that's going on, if that'd be okay with everyone. Just for the next meeting, we're going to meet with the Department of Education, Early Development, and I asked them, I had 6 questions for them as well, but I would solicit from you if you would like to. We could certainly we can tweak these questions any way you like. But those questions, and just so we can all become informed, what is DEED and how is it structured? What is the overarching educational philosophy of DEED? Let's step back 10 steps and get the big picture. Give a brief history of education in Alaska from BIA to SOS, AUBSD, and the REAAs, and how all that's evolved. alphabet soup or swimming. And what do they perceive the differences and similarities between and among the rural, bush, and urban schools? Give an overview of the DEED budget and how it works, and I hope you're there in that meeting. And what does DEED perceive to be the problem in education? What would the DEED like this session of the legislature to address? And those are the questions I have, but if you'd like to amend those, they asked if there's any more questions. So I believe that next meeting is on Monday and half of Wednesday. And the other half of Wednesday, we have a joint meeting with the Senate. And excuse me, Sheila, what do we have scheduled for Friday?
It is, Mr. Chair, it is an update on the working group on graduation rates. And so we'll be talking about things that they have learned on dropouts and how to address graduation.
Thank you. And Representatives Cisna and Kawasaki and Feige will, they'll do their homework and they'll also present in that time. So, okay, I believe the meeting is adjourned.